Hi, and welcome to our latest episode of Tapped. This is Gretel. I will be your host for today. Julie and Joseph are off, and I am here, though, with a very exciting guest, Nora Pogge. She is a director, producer, extraordinaire, who is in the middle of wrapping up a project called She Started It, which has shown all over the world, and has gone on to create a movement about women founders of all sorts of different companies. But I will be quiet now and let her introduce herself.
Hi, my name is Nora. I'm the producer and director of She Started It, along with my co-founder Insia Sayed. And we've been working on this since 2013, so it's been quite the journey.
So since, you know, a lot of what Tapped is about getting into the zeitgeist, what's happening in culture, and you've been working in, you know, women's equality, especially in the workplace, as you said, since 2013, diving into a variety of different subjects and topics in different workplaces. What have you seen, you know, between 2013 and now?
I think what we've seen since 2013 is that there's a lot of progress on the outside, at least. So it's a topic now that people are aware of, women entrepreneurs, women in technology, the Me Too movement, pay equality, all of that. It's now part of the culture and the conversation, especially this year with Me Too and all that. But when it comes to women in technology and women in entrepreneurship, the reality is that things haven't changed that much. So, you know, there's still 96% or 94%, the numbers vary according to some studies, of VCs who are male. So people who invest in companies control the majority of the money. And those are all white guys coming from the same types of circles. And so they invest in people that they know. And this phenomenon of pattern recognition makes them invest in people who look like them. So that's one of the big issues. What's been exciting this year is that there's new companies, investment companies founded by women who are trying to challenge the status quo. So All Rays, for example, started by Eileen Lee and Jess Lee and Anne Miracle and others. They're women investors, top of their game, who are starting this company to get more women investors to fund more women-led businesses. There's also Arlen Hamilton of Backstage Capital. She just announced a $36 million fund for exclusively Black women founders. So that's exciting. That wasn't the case, you know, 5 years ago when we started. Not much was going on.
And so when you started, you reached and found out several women throughout the world who were in the process or had started or had founded multiple businesses. And captured that on camera. What was that process like of finding these women and how are they doing today?
So at the time, like I said, it was not as much of a topic. So it was a little bit harder to find women. So it was literally we started and I met Thuy Trong, who's one of the core protagonist of the film, Vietnamese founder. I met her in February 2013 at the Women Entrepreneur Conference. And she was just so exciting a character that immediately we were drawn to her and thinking we need to follow her story. And we kind of got caught by this whole project that we just, you know, followed them for 2 years and were drawn to their lives, but we never anticipated to become such a big movement and to film for 2 years these women. And I think now there's a lot more stories. That's why we're hoping to maybe do a series. She started it to follow more women. There's just so many more exciting stories that it wasn't the case 5 years ago. Now, all of these in the film, Sheena Allen, Stacey Ferreira, Thuy Trong, Brian Gafforfar, and Agathe Molina, the French, they're all doing really well. So that's exciting. Everybody should follow them on social media.
And you've not only captured and learned these women's stories, but you've also then shown it to people all over the world. What are some of those moments like for you? Have there been any really impactful stories of people coming up to you? But also, like, again, we talk about representation in many forms, being able to show that women can start businesses, even that's the ridiculous thing to say. It's like, it comes out of my mouth. Of course they can start businesses, but also, like, they, you know, can also be successful as well? Like, what has it been like to, and what have people reacted to it?
I think what's been really exciting for us is also having a big conversation in the educational space. So we've done over 350 screenings for the past year and a half all around the world. And a lot of those were at universities, high schools, middle schools. And that's why we started this film. Like, originally, the goal was to reach younger girls and get them excited about entrepreneurship and tech. And it's so it's inspiring to meet young girls who, after screening, after a conversation, come by and say, oh, I was so, you know, impressed by these women, their grit, their resilience. I feel like I could pursue my dream. I could just let them kind of keep going, or people resonating with the challenges of these women. And that's, we were also really inspired by how many people in the South resonated with the film, and a lot of people who resonate with the hustle. So a lot of communities who are used to the hustle because they're not getting access to the jobs that a lot of others get access to are really resonating with the film's grit and resilience, the message of grit and resilience that comes with the film. So that's exciting. I think there's a lot of communities that could be really tapped into when it comes to entrepreneurship and need to be given a chance.
And as you said, like, not only in the entrepreneurship community, but obviously we've seen that in the film community. And you just, you know, went to some great panels at Tribeca. Can you talk about, like, that shift in, and at this point, we're just at language and conversation and slowly grants and funding. How have you seen the workflow for women film creators change, especially in the last 18 months?
It's pretty crazy. I think the landscape in indie filmmaking has changed tremendously since we started. And now what we found exciting with the model that we developed, and we're not the first ones, you know, when I look at Sarah Moshman, who's a friend and mentor, and other filmmakers who are now doing that, it's really this community screening campaign. And a lot of people now are getting into that space, which is, well, why wait for a big distributor to give you the keys to the kingdom? Because the truth is, no one will care as much as you do about your film. So as a filmmaker and as an artist, I think it's really crucial to be an entrepreneur and to be hands on the ground and really take ownership of how your film is going to be distributed. So that's a longer conversation, but we've seen a lot of success with the community screening campaign that also allows you to have an impact piece with it. How do you want a film to be used for impact? Not everybody cares about that, and that's fine, because then you have less time for creating, but that's something I'm passionate about.
So then watching the subject in your film and then obviously going through this whole distribution process, like, would you, you know, equating almost being a filmmaker, like being a businesswoman, and your film is your product, and like, how do I sell that? How do I market that? But also get into the hands of people, and like, some of that, sometimes you have to open up doors yourself to that.
Yeah, pretty much. I think now you have to be a business person. You have to be an entrepreneur. And again, that's a whole debate, you know, because a lot of artists are focused on the arts and don't have a business acumen. I am not, you know, a business person by training. I went to school for political science and then got into journalism and filmmaking. So it's a learning curve, but unless we get public funding for the arts, unless we get more access to grants and private money, I think we all have to take matters into our own hands, especially when we see that, you know, now Netflix is working a lot with A-list talent, did Amazon slash their royalties. You kind of have to just get in there and fight for your films to be seen.
So what was that moment for you then that not only am I going to pick up the camera and capture stories via film or journalism, and then, you know, was there a point too when you're like all done, I was like, oh my gosh, I've doubly the amount of road to go. What were those moments like for you?
Yeah, I think Insia and myself, we both kind of did not anticipate that landscape. We kind of had, and again, it's been changing so fast for the past 5 years. We just thought we're going to do the traditional route. We're going to go to a film festival. We're happy to go to Mill Valley Film Festival. But obviously, we're hoping to have, you know, you get picked up and everybody's excited and they show your film and you're done and you get a Netflix deal and all those things. And that's not what happened. But at the same time, we always knew the film was about the educational impact. So no matter what happened, the goal was to have a strong screening campaign. And if you can get both, that's amazing. If you get a big distributor who lets you do impact campaigns and you do screenings, good for you. But we ended up having to do more on our own than we anticipated. But looking back, that's been the best thing because we learned all this new business and all these tools that, again, I think are going to be necessary for any filmmaker going forward.
What was one of the biggest lessons you feel like you learned?
That every time you think it's going to take X amount of time, X amount of money, you double, triple that. And every time you think, oh, I'm good, I'm finished, you're just not finished. And again, as a filmmaker, you can decide to let it go. You can say, I want to keep making other films. I'm going to let this film go. But if you really care about the impact of the film, or if you feel like there's still something to be done, and you tapped into, like you said, a cultural moment, the zeitgeist, which we felt like we did with this film, because now people really care about this topic, we don't feel ready to let it go. We feel like there's still something to be done. There's still more content to be created for us to keep, you know, being relevant. We can't like beat the drum with the same film for the next 10 years. But I feel like it's worth to keep going.
Now that, as you said, the drum is being beat and like doors are opening up, that the marginalization of stories, especially of women in business and whatnot, things are coming through. Is there any anecdotes or stories that have really surprised you that have come out, again, especially in the last 18 months, where like, oh, I want to go capture that, or, oh, that's exactly what I've said in my film. Like, we've been talking about this for years.
A story specifically?
Like, is there somebody or a person or something that you feel like is still not being seen?
Yeah, I think something that I really want to be doing more now, and that's why I really care about this She Started a documentary series, just continuing the narrative, that there's so many more stories to be told. Like in our film, Stacey and Twee are the two main protagonists, and then Sheena, Agathe, and Brianne are the secondary protagonists. But I feel like there's a lot more diversity in founders that needs to be represented. And now there's so many more women of every possible cultural background that are launching businesses that are extremely interesting. And I'm just literally dying to film a bunch of them if I can get, you know, some money to get it started. I feel like those stories need to be told. And I think there's some places that are looking into that, but a lot of it is reality TV. And I'm just dying to just show some of those stories.
Speaking of like future projects, like what are the things that you're working on in addition to this documentary series that you're like really excited about? And how can we like follow you and learn more about She Started It?
Well, shestartedfilm.com is the website. That's where you can find out how to host a screening and how to get access to the film and to our resources for the topic. And what I'm most excited about is also the curriculum that we build for schools. We're targeting grade 6 through 9, and we're partnering with a bunch of schools to get it there. In Boston, we're working with J Labs to get it into Boston schools. So that's something I'm really excited about. And then obviously the series, if we can get it off the ground to follow more women.
So what are some of those lessons in those lessons plans that you think people should learn or open up conversations to? What does that even look like to be like, well, of course, women and girls should have equal rights and stuff?
I mean, what we focused on with the curriculum is really entrepreneurial mindset, entrepreneurship education. So there's a little bit about, you know, equal rights and how to bring the conversation for boys too about how can we level the playing field. But it was really more about how to get everyone into that entrepreneur mindset. So it's really super hands-on, like kind of more project-based learning, that new thing that a lot of schools are trying now. And how can we get kids to use the film to think about, oh, how do you pitch? How do you present an idea in front of everybody? How do you get to convince people? How do you look at your environment as an entrepreneur, as in what are problems I can solve? How can I help my community? How do I build my self-confidence? And then create something and present at the end of the whole lesson plan. They will, you know, come up to the class and present their project. So really getting hands-on. I think that's crucial. And our exec producer, Ted Digensmith, just wrote a book about that called How School Could Be, I think that's the name. And he's really, really like put a lot of thought into how we can change our education system
to help facilitate that thinking as early as possible.
Yeah, because now the truth is, and that's one of the stories you can see in the film, is you see Stacey Ferreira, who drops out of class because she wants to do the startup. And we're not advocating for kids to drop out for no reason, but just the way the school system is set up makes you really depend on grades, on a type of thinking that does not get you anywhere. For a lot of people, you get out of school, you're in debt, you don't know what you want to do, you don't have some of the skills that you need. So that's not that we definitely want to change that through the film as well.
What are the things, projects that aren't your own that you're really excited about and consuming? As I said, like, you went to Tribeca. Who's doing it right, would you say?
In terms of filmmaking or in terms of impact or?
Both, any, either.
I mean, I'm a little bit biased and I didn't get to see a lot of films at Tribeca because, yeah, there's a lot going on. I saw specifically a film that our editor, Jennifer Steinman, made. I mean, she produced this film, which Nora Shapiro directed, called Time for Ilhan. And I loved it so much because it's part of what I care about. It's about Ilhan Omar, who I think was the first Somali American to be elected to a state representative
legislature.
Yeah, and she's really inspiring. And the whole film follows her campaign until she gets elected. I mean, I love the film so much, and that's the kind of film I'm excited about. Like, it's social justice. It's empowered women. It's, you know, how can we make a change in the world? So that's the kind of film I'm excited about. There's so many more that I didn't see. I also love The Judge right now by Erica Khan, about the first woman judge and the Sharia law in the Middle East. And those are the type of stories I gravitate towards, like women who are never represented, who you never hear about, who are changing the world. Like, that's my jam, obviously.
And I think people are, and I think that's to the surprise of many, like, people actually want to consume that stuff. I think we're looking out for it in a way that we've never seen before. And, like, there are untapped markets, as I've read in many articles about women seeing themselves and laughing, crying, learning, but also succeeding and having their stories be told. Like, I think, you know, there's so much more to say and do.
Yeah, people are now suddenly like, yeah, people want to see these things.
Yeah, and as you said, like, opening those doors for creators, but also changing the way stuff gets funded. Because it's not only VCs in Silicon Valley. You know, we're still looking at heads of studios and stuff like that, where a lot of the money is concentrated to make sure that, they also fund a variety of projects, to say the least.
Exactly. That's what needs to happen. We need to change this entire industry.
Speaking of the industry, one of the industry's biggest nights was last night at the Met Gala, or the Met Ball. What were some of your favorite looks?
Well, easy. Obviously, Rihanna, because she's my favorite. And I love that she, as usual, like, shut it down with her Pope costume dress. And then my favorite, I think, is Lena Waithe, because she came with this cape with how do you call this flag?
Rainbow flag.
The rainbow flag, yeah. So she came with this cape with the rainbow flag on, and I was like, whoa, that's like a really interesting, bold statement that she was like.
And to put context to that, the theme was heavenly bodies, and was heavily focused around Catholic inspiration and art.
Yeah, so the fashion and the Catholic imagination.
That's the longer title. And I can't wait to go see the display at the Met itself.
Which ones did you like?
I really like, my favorite, I would say, like, the person whose dress outfit I would wear would be SZA's with the halo. I really loved some of the halo inspiration. I thought some of the men, like Chadwick Boseman, Jared Leto, were really, really good.
So good.
And they really stood out. Yeah, but I really tend to like people who do take risks, who somehow be able to share a little bit, part of their personality. Frances McDormand, I thought was brilliant.
Yeah,
she was amazing. In that. But also, you know, a little bit with the theme, but also challenges the theme as well, like Lena did.
Yeah, I love that. I also love Nicki Minaj with her, like, red devil. I was like, damn, I think she's the only one who thought about that. I haven't seen any other devils. So I thought that was super smart. Yeah, I love women and men who, like, challenge, like, what you expect this should be.
But something that didn't really challenge what I expect to be, but it was unexpected, was definitely the surprise performer of the evening, which was Madonna, who showed up and sang Like a Prayer with a bunch of monks.
I didn't even see that.
Yeah, so look out for Instagram, Twitter video of that. I highly recommend. Because she stops the show, literally.
That's smart.
And appears at the top of the staircase. But I also think, too, like, it's amazing to see how diverse the Met Gala has gotten over the years. You know, I think thanks in part to the work to Anna Wintour, but also I think public pressure to show a diversity in fashion and stars and personalities.
Absolutely. And also another thing to that is, like, a lot of these people who make the culture today are not white guys. And so you can't have, like, the biggest cultural event of the year, one of the biggest, like the Met Gala, and not invite, you know, people like Chadwick Boseman or Rihanna, or, like, those people make the culture right now. Like, it's just what it is.
Yeah, totally. And then we're now going to come in on our closing segment, which is Tapped predictions. So do you have any Tapped predictions for the future? I will start to give you a second to think about that. I would say on theme, I think that we will see some interesting, diverse Met Gala or Met Ball themes in the future. And I think people will be more thoughtful and being able to take out, especially as we looked at appropriation and stuff like that. I think we're in a changing world where themes and cultures and trends will become more diverse in a way that we think about them and appropriate them and display them.
Interesting. Hard to follow. I mean, I don't know if it's a wish or prediction, but I'm really optimistic when I look at the youth, because again, a lot of my work is going to schools, and that gives me a lot of hope. And then we saw the Parkland students and all those young people around the world who are, like, really taking up the mantle of stuff that we or our parents couldn't do. And I mean, we obviously have a lot of work to do. You and I, we're still young enough that we, you know, but I, like, get really inspired when I see kids like that. Some days when I'm like, oh, I can't, you know, I can't do it, I think of these kids who are like 17, 13 year olds who are teenagers, and I'm like, all right, you can. Like, if they are doing it, like, you can do it. So I think the youth is going to kind of take over. Maybe it's a wish more than a prediction, but
I mean, they really will take over. But I think the fact that they realize that their voice can be heard at a much younger age than maybe we have seen or felt, or seen, or, you know, are capable of, that will definitely happen, I think, sooner. And I'm a big fan, as you have known me through various different work situations, of bringing young people to the table and allowing them to have a voice in making decisions as well. So exactly. I second your Tapped prediction.
Thank you.
And then last but not least, where can we find you on social media?
At Nora Poggi, NORAPOGGI, everywhere, literally Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. And she started it everywhere also.
Awesome. Thanks. And you can also be sure to follow us at Tapped Pod on Twitter. And we will look forward to hearing you for the next episode. And thanks for listening.
Thank you.